Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the Political Cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program, our award-winning broadcast coming to you this evening from WLRM Studios, AM 1380. In Memphis, Tennessee, it's Saturday evening, January 29th. We are live, unrehearsed, and uncensored, and privileged to be able to bring you another sterling edition of our broadcast tonight. We are, of course, syndicated by the Liberty News Radio Network, where you can tune in to our online stream at libertynewsradio.com. And if you're listening to us on one of the AM/FM affiliate stations of LNR, we welcome you all the more. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to tell you, this show tonight is going to be very unorthodox. You know me. I am a taskmaster. I am obsessive compulsive. I am neat. I am prepared. And tonight, I am
none of the above,
as Keith Alexander so appropriately chimed in. The reason being is because tonight's program was originally slated and was scheduled a month in advance to serve as one last promotion for the American Renaissance Conference, which was set to be held at a very posh hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina. Well, as you've probably already heard, the status of that conference is in flux. It's still going to be held next weekend, February 4th through the 6th, but just at an alternate location. I have been working very closely with Jared Taylor, the editor of American Renaissance Magazine, in order to get this problem favorably resolved. We'll be talking with you much more about that during tonight's second hour. During tonight's second hour, we were originally supposed to be talking with Jared Taylor. I did, however, insist to Jared that he had enough on his plate, and with him holding a press conference in Charlotte on Monday, it just didn't make sense for him to appear on the show tonight. So, in Jared's stead, we will have either Richard Spencer, the executive editor of Alternative Right, or the prominent Atlanta attorney Sam Dixon on the show during tonight's second hour. As I said, everything is kind of fluid right now as we bring to you another live edition of the Political Cesspool radio program. So, you know, Keith, we're in the trenches, we're rolling with the punches, and it's going to be obvious and apparent as we broadcast tonight's show.
Yes, of course. Amran needs the benefit of James's jungle fighting expertise from living and navigating the waters of the political cesspool here in Memphis. And I'm sure that there's been a lot of back and forth as James is doing that. But on the other hand, we're prepared. At least I'm prepared for this first hour. You know, I've kind of been sheltered from all of this by James. James is one who, if he had any hair, would be standing on end, but he does this week. But I've just been like old man River rolling along, James.
Well, Keith, you have been, and you are well prepared tonight for the first hour, so I'm going to be leaning heavily on my very able-bodied co-host this evening. You know, this is the best show on radio because we work with the best. And I have an incredible staff with Bill Rowland, Keith Alexander, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and Winston Smith. I'm not heavy. I'm their brother. And they're carrying the load tonight. And thanks to Liberty News Radio, we never miss a beat. And so we're going to give you a great show tonight. It's just not going to be the show that you expected, but it's going to be good nevertheless. And during tonight's second hour, as I did make mention of just a moment ago, we will be covering the latest developments pertaining to the American Renaissance Conference in detail. Lots of opinion and analysis by myself and Sam Dixon, or Richard Spencer, or both. You just don't know. But Keith has a little bit of good news before we head into what he has prepared for the listening audience this evening. He's got a lot prepared. I'm looking at his notebook over here. And let me tell you something, folks. It's thick. Lots of chicken scratch. Keith comes in with notes handwritten. He's old school radio here. But Keith is going to share with you, we've been very blessed to be the recipients of an abundance of mail each and every week. The way this show has grown has just been miraculous, and we have fans all over the world. And as a matter of fact, we are doing our weekly virtual fan party at the Council of Conservative Citizens website. If you want to join us in the online chat, we're in the chat room right now speaking with the fans as they listen to the show. If you want to join us, we have people in there all the way from Australia and South Africa, all around the United States, of course. Canada, I see there. The UK, listen, they're all there. Go to cfcc.org and you will see us there. Keith has a little bit of good news. I was mentioning the amount of correspondence we received by email, snail mail, what have you. Got one today that just nailed it. And this actually comes from a listener in Canada who, you know, we always say we have the best fans in talk radio and they're very perceptive. Now, this is a gentleman that I've never heard from before. He wrote me for the first time this week, and he really nails the kind of show we've got. So we're going to give you a little bit of good news, and then I promise everything else from here on out will be bad news.
They're particularly perceptive when they praise James, as we have in this one. This is from a listener and an internet audience member named Stuart. He says, "Hello, I think your show is great. James Edwards does an excellent job as the lead host. The other co-hosts provide their individual strengths to combine for a thought-provoking show with a variety of interesting guests. To be able to use written words, spoken interviews, videos, and chat, all of which are accessible on your website, is a great way to get the message out to the people." From Stuart.
And that pretty much sums up what we do each and every week. And as long as Jesus tarries his coming, we will continue to do it each and every week. And we're happy to bring you the program tonight. So tonight's first segment, as always, kind of a announcement, a little platform for what to expect during tonight's show. Keith, why don't you give them a quick cursory review of what they can expect from you over the course of the remainder of the first hour before we get to our featured guest later on.
Okay, we've got three segments. The first will be on public sector unions, which have been in the news quite a bit lately. And, of course, that's what the Martin Luther King sanitation worker strike was all about. It's not advertised that way. You would think it was just the quintessential existential struggle between good and evil, but it was actually a struggle about whether there would be public sector unions in Memphis, Tennessee or not back in the late 60s. Then, for the second segment, Martin Luther King Day and Cultural Marxism. And for the third segment, the Memphis-Shelby County School Consolidation rhubarb, which is going on right here in Memphis, Tennessee, and we're going to give you the benefit of that, even though it may be boring to some of the rest of you. It is just another front on the never-ending culture war with the left.
The Political Cesspool, the only radio program that continues to talk about Martin Luther King all the way into February. I thought we were done with him for a year, Keith.
Well, he just keeps cropping up. You know, we'd leave him alone. We'd let him rest in peace, but the left won't. They keep, and of course, they're getting ready to rev him up again for Black History Month, which is February, of course, and we'll have just one veneration of him after another. So we figure, you know, we'll beat the left to the punch.
Well, we are, and unlike the left, we're going to look at the man's legacy, as we have been doing, with objectivity and honesty. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle your seatbelts. This is going to be a bumpy ride through the political cesspool tonight. That much I guarantee you. We got to take our first break for the evening. Stay tuned. We will resume tonight's show on the Liberty News Radio Network right after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, out of the frying pan and into the fire. Welcome back to the political cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards, Keith Alexander. By my side here in the studio tonight, I know a lot of people are tuned in tonight to find out the latest news about the American Renaissance Conference. You're going to get that in the second hour. But first, Keith is chomping at the bit, raring to go, and I am going to turn it over to him without any further ado. Keith, it's all yours.
Great. Thanks, James. The first topic for tonight is public sector unions. We're trying to help people just unbundle and unpack all of these ideas and basic tools of the left that keep being thrown at us and trying to make sense of them for you. If a private sector employer makes a bad enough deal with his employees' union, he'll go broke. Some did, and that's one of the unpublicized reasons why so many U.S. manufacturing concerns have their operations moved offshore. Public sector employers can't go bankrupt. By law, and a symbiotic relationship is developed between public sector unions and the politicians, mostly Democrat, who promise and deliver fat pensions and other extravagant employee benefits, and then aren't around 25 years later when the day of reckoning comes and the chickens come home to roost. Now, in America today, basically, private sector unions are a thing of the past, with the exception of a few prominent unions like the Teamsters and the United Auto Workers. For the most part, they're weak, they don't have much power, and that's because there's such a surfeit, such a glut of labor now that employers have been able to lobby the federal government for the purpose of allowing them to manufacture goods overseas, particularly in the Pacific Rim, at near starvation wages, $1.50 an hour, for example, or less, 50 cents an hour, and ship those goods into America without any tariffs or without any negative tax consequences whatsoever. In fact, they're even unloading them down in Mexico and putting them on the NAFTA highway because they don't want to pay American stevedores union wages in order to unload these ships. So that's unions nowadays, for all intents and purposes, are basically a public sector phenomenon. And unfortunately, or coincidentally, however you want to put it, minorities, and particularly blacks, are as attracted to public sector employment as they are to women with big posteriors. And the reason they're attracted is it's a lazy man's option. You get three things in public sector employment that you don't get in private sector employment. First of all, you get a defined benefit pension. Only part of the economy where you get that, where private sector employees have a 401k statement and they open their quarterly statement with trepidation every quarter because they know they're going to take a hit. Somehow, you know, their nest egg has diminished. Public sector employees know that World War III can come along and they'll get the same check every month. So pensions are, you know, Cadillac pensions are one thing. The other thing is Cadillac health care. Again, the best health care insurance is almost always public sector insurance. That's why Congress is holding on to theirs while they're trying to thrust Obamacare on the rest of us. You can be treated for anything from an STD to, you know, abusing your body with fried chicken or, you know, excess food, diabetes, renal failure, and whatnot. And just about everything is paid 100 cents on the dollar if you're a public sector employee. As the private sector employees can tell you, not so much in the private sector. And third, and most importantly, if you're a public sector employee, you can't be fired for incompetence. You have to go through this rigmarole that basically allows you to thumb your nose at propriety and to engage in this kind of passive-aggressive technique of looking like you're working and getting nothing done, and your job is safe. Now, with that benefit, a public sector employee that's just inherent to being a public sector employee, they're protected by the Hatch Act and the Civil Service Act and all these other things that make it almost impossible to fire them unless you, you know, basically go to war with them, you know, and it's a 10-year campaign. What is it about public sector employees that makes them want to unionize? Well, of course, they want to get the best deal possible. And that's really what the Memphis sanitation workers' strike was about back in 1968. Like I said earlier, if you listen to the media, if you listen to what the academics have to say, if you listen to the mainstream conservatives, you'd think it was some existential battle between good and evil, something right out of C.S. Lewis. But instead, what it was really about was whether or not the city of Memphis would have public sector unions or not, James. Henry Loeb, made a presentation at my church back then, and they had a little Roman Catholic priest from up north who gave the striker's side. And what Henry Loeb said was, there's a law in Tennessee that prohibits public sector employees from unionizing. It doesn't say black public sector employees can't unionize and whites could. It said public sector employees, period, could not unionize. He said, it's a law of the state of Tennessee, and I'm bound to follow it. Furthermore, I think it's a good law, because if I grant the sanitation workers the right to strike, how can I turn down the policemen and the firemen? And the public interests, the interests of the public, are just too vulnerable to work stoppages to allow unions to happen, because if you have a union, you're going to have a work stoppage. You're going to have a strike. You know, it follows like night follows day, and day follows night. So consequently, I'm opposed to it. Well, then the Roman Catholic priest came up to speak, and, you know, they had their patter down even back then. He said, you know, this is nothing but rationalization. This is Henry Loeb is the plantation master at the old plantation trying to keep the black people down. And, I mean, Henry Loeb, you should have seen Henry Loeb. He was one of my favorite Jewish guys of all time. He was a Jewish guy who had an Ivy League education. He went to Brown University, but he was 6'4" tall, and he looked and sounded like John Wayne. Well, he grabbed the podium, glared down at this Roman Catholic priest and said, let me tell you about these people that march in the streets. They stink. And then he really lit into them. But Henry Loeb was right. What is happening in the public sector unions now shows that Henry Loeb was right. Public sector unions should be outlawed. Even FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, thought so. Blue state locals are one of the primary source of the problems. In New York City, there are retired rank-and-file employees of public sector unions that are drawing pensions of over $100,000 a year. Hide and watch as the Obama administration makes the federal government, including fiscally responsible red state America, bail out leftist, irresponsible blue state and local governments who can no longer pay public sector pensions and salaries. If not, look for third world riots in places like California and New York City. Just like the politicians, the left won't be around to answer questions when America crashes and burns due to their third world immigration policy. See, there's just more and more, you know, pressure from the left that's going to result in the destruction of America. You know, we're building this debt incrementally. You can't give benefits to the poor without bankrupting the public treasury. As Abraham Lincoln said, the Lord must love poor people because he made so many of them. And if you live in a place like Memphis, you're certainly aware of that. So consequently, we need to understand that public sector employee unions were what the MLK strike was all about, and they were wrong. Henry Loeb was right then. He's right now.
We got to take a break, everybody. Keith Alexander, the great, holding court here tonight. We'll be back.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. You know, on a night like this, the benefit of having a staff like I have is all the more appreciated. You know, each of our co-hosts have a different strength and attribute that they bring to the program. I think anyone listening to that second segment tonight can tell what Keith's is, and that it's readily apparent. You know, Keith Alexander has the ability to pontificate and hold court indefinitely. Great analysis. A great commentary. We're going to turn it back over to Keith for more tonight. And this is one of those nights where I need a guy like Keith sitting to my right here in the broadcast booth, because I have been absolutely immersed in working with my good friend, Jared Taylor, editor of the scientific journal American Renaissance, trying to put the wheels back on the wagon there in Charlotte. And we're very confident that that has been done. So anyway, duty called, had to go to the trenches. Keith showed up tonight prepared to fill my very big shoes. But of course, Keith always does a great job in the first hour. I'm being a little bit facetious. Always does a great job. And we're going to hope that the rest of the show is going to be as good as the bar that he has set this evening. Keith, I know you've gotten more prepared for us during this third segment. By judging from your notes, you haven't even scratched the tip of the iceberg yet.
That's right, James. James was doing Condition Red damage control this week for the Amran conference, and like Batman in the Batcave, when the message came in on the telephone, he and Robin, and I'll let you know who Robin is later, was running for the Batmobile and went right to work doing his thing. So let's get back to the topic, though, that we got here. Now, the second topic is MLK, Martin Luther King Day, and cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism is said to be a blending of Marx and Freud, and the Freudian aspects of cultural Marxism are on full display during the MLK holiday period every year. In other words, psychological conditioning and brainwashing. That's what the MLK celebration is all about. It serves a bunch of purposes. One purpose is that, like Lenin's holiday in Russia, they want to impress people that individual effort is not the way to affect change in your life. The way to affect change is by collective action, by uprisings, riots, just like the civil rights movement. In other words, get on the left's bandwagon and things will change for the better. That's what they want you to know, and that's what they're reinforcing with Martin Luther King Day. Now, a white person that celebrates Martin Luther King Day is like a peasant celebrating famine or Louis XVI celebrating the French Revolution. Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Bill O'Reilly, all the rest of the Kool-Aid drinking crew don't seem to realize that Martin Luther King, like Nikita Khrushchev, wanted to bury them. And still does. You know, the people that are carrying his torch now still do. You know, there's nothing more pathetic than, you know, for example, back during the Bolshevik Revolution in times, some loyal communist operative being taken to the firing squad, protesting his innocence and his love for the revolution right to the very end. That's what all of these so-called conservatives supporting Martin Luther King Day are really doing. Glenn Beck said on his January 26, 2011 program that the American people can only be defeated through brainwashing. He was right, but he, unfortunately, is one of the primary brainwashers with his sycophantic praise of Martin Luther King, along with that of the so-called Tea Party off-the-reservation radical conservatives like Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann. At least Rush Limbaugh doesn't join in, but then he lived through the civil rights movement and its consequences in southern Missouri, unlike Palin up in Alaska, who was too young for it, and Bachmann likewise up in Minnesota, and Glenn Beck up in Oregon. Can anyone say kept opposition? Then less than 3 minutes after the brainwashing epiphany on his program, Beck touts his new insiders-only film, Rumors of War, warning his devoted minions that both the U.S. and Israel are about to be nuked by the evil powerhouse Iran. Can anybody say WMDs and George Bush? Obama, the left-wing pacifist presidential candidate, has now been thoroughly housebroken to such an extent that the military-industrial complex Eisenhower warned us about has worked its magic on him to the point that he has declared the Orwellian-named Defense Department of the United States government off-limits for his proposed State of the Union speech, federal governmental expenditure freeze. See, you're just not going to find your way out of the woods with leadership like Palin, Bachmann, or Beck. You're going to have to understand that Martin Luther King was not the friend of everybody. Basically, If you want to know what he was about, look to the name of the NAACP, which was, you know, basically an adjunct of him, and he was an adjunct of them. They're the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. That's what Martin Luther King was about, the advancement of black people specifically in America and colored people worldwide. He doesn't care and never did care a fig about what happened to whites. He would couch his terms, as his handlers made sure he did, in universalist terms at times, and try to say that what's good for black people is good for everybody. But obviously, life in many respects is a zero-sum game. If you give more Harvard Law School admission slots to blacks, there are less for whites. If you give more medical school admission slots to blacks, there are less for whites. If you give more high-paying union jobs to blacks, there are less for whites in America. Now, you know, wake up and smell the coffee. You need to get the word out to your friends. Martin Luther King was not your friend. He was not some old dispenser of unconditional love like Jesus or something, the way that he's portrayed. He's the only person in American history now that is venerated with a holiday, a national holiday devoted exclusively to him. George Washington doesn't have a holiday anymore. It's folded in with other presidents on President's Day. Only Martin Luther King has this special honor. And the reason he has this special honor is because the left is in charge, folks, and they want to make sure that a leftist message comes through loud and clear every January and then into February, so that people understand the holiness and the righteousness of the civil rights movement. And they run out all that grainy footage of fire hoses and police dogs and whatnot. They don't tell you that Martin Luther King was a plagiarist, a serial adulterer, a physical and sexual abuser of women, a communist sympathizer, and a communist operative. He was there to tear down the old order. And, of course, they want the old order torn down. But I think that the rest of America knows what was good about America, and they want to see that continue. If we want our prosperity to continue, we certainly do want America's past and its values to continue into the next century.
And as I've often said, Keith, and that was, of course, an outstanding commentary, as I've often said, if you took our political views, the paleoconservative views that we hold on this radio program, that we espouse on this radio program, and you transplanted us back into the 1950s, we would be considered as moderates. I think moderates by that standard. But the thing of it all is, none of us dispute the fact that the best and most qualified applicant for a job should get the position. That's what we advocate here for. That is what is attributed to King, unfortunately, as the so-called civil rights movement continued to evolve and continued to take on itself in the forms of quotas and set-asides and affirmative action. You see now that you have preferential hiring, and certainly we are in admissions in schools and just all over the place, and we are certainly suffering from that unfair system, and that is something that this radio program protests, and it's something that you have to bring up when examining King's legacy, and we've done so, I think, for the last couple of weeks very honestly and very objectively. People might not agree with our opinion, but I believe that you have to at least have a debate about these things, and we're able to infuse that debate out there through this radio program. And you mentioned Keith George Washington. As this thing continues to get more and more obscene and more out of control, this preference for minorities and how everything that European Americans do is evil, we saw an MLK rally in Columbia, South Carolina. They met at a location, an outside location that had a statue of George Washington. They boarded up George Washington, built a partition around him so none of the black attendees would have to be offended by the sight of him. Now, folks, that is absolutely absurd. And we will call a spade on this radio program. That's what we're doing right now. We got to take a break. James Edwards, Keith Alexander back right after this.
We'll be back right after these messages.
We got to get out of this place. If
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. James Edwards and Keith Alexander here with you on the award-winning world... I don't know if we're world-renowned or notoriously known around the world, but we are known, and they do know... They do keep tabs on us. It's a pretty big show. Welcome back to our pretty big show, The Political Cesspool. Keith Alexander doing a lot of the heavy lifting here this first hour. I promise to carry my share of the load as the program continues. I'm still working on some matters. I had the unfortunate experience of going through a situation very similar to that which Jared Taylor is going through right now here in Memphis, when I hosted a conference of similar size back in 2008. Of course, regular listeners of this program are well aware of that story, so we won't rehash it. But because I have gone through something like this, and because I was able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again and claim victory and find an alternate venue on short notice, I have been, and defeat the left in that battle, I have been, named as the resident expert on matters such as this. And so I've been heavily in league with Jared Taylor over the course of the last couple of days, and very honored and privileged to be called upon. And it's always a pleasure to serve and help a friend in need. So anyway, that being said, for everyone tuning in late, Keith Alexander carrying the bulk of the program here this first hour, and he's doing such a fine job, I am not going to ask him to stop. Keith, back over to you, and I know you're going to be covering in this segment before we go to break, and then in the second hour, lots of opinion and analysis on Amren forthcoming, so I know a lot of you are tuned in tonight to hear what's going on. Stay tuned. It's coming up, and then we're going to have a fun and loose third hour, and hopefully end the night on a little more uplifting note. But Keith, you have now prepared for the audience something that's sort of a local issue, specific to the Memphis area, but it is something that could present itself in communities around the country. And so to be forewarned is to be forearmed. Keith, tell them what's going on in Memphis and why it applies to them.
Yeah, this is exactly what happens. This is another front in the culture war, and you know, the left has its playbook set. It was set in the civil rights movement, in the black rights struggle, quote unquote, and they use that same blueprint for the feminist movement, for the homosexual rights movement, for the criminal rights movement, for the sexual revolution, for the drug culture, for radical environmentalism. They always follow the same pattern. So you need to be aware of the pattern. This is like the Civil War. You know, there are a lot of little battles in Arkansas, for example, that most people aren't aware of. But, you know, these are little battles, and they're part of a big mosaic. And what's happening in Memphis right now is another one of those pieces of the puzzle. Specifically, after busing hit Memphis in 1973 under the infamously named Plan Z. It sounds like Plan Z from outer space with Bela Lugosi or something, one of these old campy horror movies. We had to live in that horror movie here in Memphis. And as a result, lots of white parents took their children out of the public schools and first put them into what were derisively called segregation academies by the left. They use this term to put them down, but basically they were low-cost private schools. Basically every church, white church in town, turned its Sunday school building into some type of little school, because put yourself in the position of the white parents. You live in a nice neighborhood. Your child is used to going to a good school, high-achieving school. Suddenly, in August of 1973, you get a letter from the school board saying, "Dear Mr. Edwards, your daughter, Isabel, has been transferred to Booker T. Washington Junior High School. Have her pick up the bus at the corner of Central and Fenwick at 7:15 a.m. on Monday, August the 26th. What are you going to say? Gee whiz, honey, I guess you lost life's lottery. I hope you make it back in one piece." No, you're going to do exactly what they did and try to find an alternative education for your children. Well, a lot of these segregation academies fell by the wayside, and as a result, a lot of white people with children moved to the suburbs, the ones that could not afford the more expensive private schools that were well-funded and continued on. And that same pattern is followed, basically, down to this day. Wealthier whites, no matter how loudly they proclaim their liberalism, tend to send their children to private schools, and they may live in the city, and often do, because they can afford to, because they don't have to access the Memphis public schools. On the other hand, people that live out in the county, you have people that, white people that had lesser means, tended to move to the suburbs where they could get the good public translation free school out in the county, because the busing order applied only to the city of Memphis. Well, you know, there's a parasite host relationship in Memphis and just about everywhere else between the black and white population, particularly in regard to schools. And as they say, don't kill the dog or all the fleas will die. Well, the dog in Memphis has just about died. So now the fleas are ready to hop on another host, and they're about to jump into Shelby County. The Shelby County school system, which is majority white, got all A's on its last State of Tennessee report card. The city of Memphis, conversely, got all F's except for one D, and it's run by a majority black school board.
And just to give the folks listening around the country and around the world a little frame of reference, as Keith has already alluded to, the Memphis City schools are the schools that lie within the urban areas, within the city limits of Memphis, and obviously the white flight area would be the county and the outlying areas, and this is like this in all major cities. And so the county schools are virtually white, and Keith mentioned their grades, whereas the city schools are exactly the opposite. And what's in place now is that the city schools, and only the city schools, get to vote whether or not they would like to merge the two districts into one super district. And why, Keith, does the county not get to have a say in that? Why do the county schools not get to vote in that as well? Why just the city voting to merge?
Well, it's because under the Tennessee Constitution, it is the county that has the primary responsibility for providing public education. Now, a separate city school district was formed way long ago, back in the early 20th century, and has been in existence. And the way they're doing this consolidation is basically the city of Memphis school system is simply surrendering its charter and thereby thrusting all of the Memphis school students on the doorstep, as it was, of the county to educate. Now, of course, they're pressing after this surrender of charter happens, and there's a referendum about it, like James said, and only residents of Memphis, and of course Memphis is vastly majority black now, about 65% to 70%, so they expect it to pass. And if it does pass, then the present Memphis City School Board is doing their best to make sure that there is a prompt election for a new school board so they can come in and hopefully, at least from their viewpoint, dominate that. Now, it's not sure that that will happen. It may be that the various municipalities of Shelby County, Tennessee, where Memphis is located outside of the city of Memphis, like Bartlett, where yours truly is coming from right now, and Millington, Arlington, Collierville, Germantown will set up their own school systems, or that the what is now the Shelby County school system could create a separate school system too, now that the Republicans are in charge of the state legislature. Of course, being Republicans, you can expect them to wimp out and not do anything that's politically incorrect, like stand up for the interests of the white people in the county. So that may not happen. But nonetheless, this is what's going on. Shay Flynn, who is a white guy who is a member of the Memphis City Council, said, "Why does Memphis insist it's different from other Tennessee cities that successfully merged city and county school systems?" Well, the answer to Shay is the 800-pound gorilla in the living room, and that's that Memphis is the only city in Tennessee with a majority black population and an 86% black public school population. Now, this is what is feared in the county. Now, if the people in the, first of all, the county school system is not an all-white system. In fact, it's one of the supposedly most integrated school systems in Tennessee. It has approximately 30 to 35% black, and then for 65% to 70% white. But it's, and it's a success. But of course, you know, this is what the left does. The left, if they cannot raise blacks to the level of whites, they want to pound whites down to the level of blacks. And that will be the result, or that's the feared result, for the parents that live in Shelby County. And again, you know, you're going to see white flight, people moving to the further suburbs. And then I predict you will see all the elites talking about the great virtues of merger, of metro government, where they go beyond the county lines. They're not going to allow that white tax base and the white students to get out from under their control, James.
Frank and candid commentary from Keith Alexander. As always, you know why we call him Keith Alexander the Great. It's because the man's brilliant. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got to take a break. We'll be back with opinion and analysis on American Renaissance during the entirety of tonight's second hour, coming up right after this.
Something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon, and Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the amen.